Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode contains depictions of extreme violence, explicit language, and drug use. Some of the content is difficult to hear. We encourage our listeners to exercise self-care when listening to this episode.
What am I doing this for? What's
out.
Going on?
Straight out.
Why? What have I done?
Straight out.
What's going on?
Okay.
Huh? What are you doing? Why are you doing this? I haven't done that. I don't know anybody. Fuck, that hurts. Fucking hell. What's going on? Can you tell me what's going on? What are you doing this for? I haven't touched nobody, I've done nothing.
Stop shivering and shaking, you'll be right.
What are you gonna do? What are you doing with that thing?
Where's the fucking money?
What money? I haven't got any money. I haven't got any money.
Where's the money?
I haven't got the money. I don't know where the money is.
Where's the money?
I don't know. I haven't seen the money. I don't know where the money is.
Where's the money?
Mate, I don't know nothing about no money. What are you doing? Oi! Fuck, I know that's hot. Mate, that's really hot. Mate, come on. Don't do it. Mate! What are you doing? Don't do that! Please, don't! You're fucking me! What are you...
Give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide, open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze and listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in, just turn me loose.
Mark Brandon Reed was born on the 17th of November 1954. He's been described as many things: criminal, standover man, lunatic, author, entertainer, bullshit artist. Chopper was a nickname he got as a kid from the cartoon show Yakky Doodle. For a criminal of his reputation, he lived a semi-long life, which he wrote about in a series of semi-autobiographical fictional crime novels, which were later adapted into a film. When it comes to Chopper, it's hard to decipher the fact from the fiction. What we know for sure is that he was a violent and unpredictable criminal who spent a lot of time in jail and a lot of time talking about it. And talking was perhaps the thing Chopper did best. So what better way to hear about it all than from the man himself?
If you want to hear about my childhood, I'll tell you about it, but I don't dwell on it, nor do I use it as a sort of an excuse for how I turned up. I didn't have a very nice childhood. There were several attempts to do away with me. When I was a little kid, I spent a little while in an orphanage because when I was born, my mother said that I was not a gift from God. things went downhill from there. My mother was a devout Seventh-day Adventist who placed religion above anything else. She was devoted to her church, and that was it. And you were either with her or against her. Well, my dad was a different kettle of fish altogether. He was a good guy.
When he used to get me to hold a table tennis bat, it's a paddle, around out like that, and he'd fire at it with a 30-shot Ruger. He'd go bang, bang, bang in the centre. He'd say, "Bring it up." I'll bring it up. Bang, bang, bang. "Bring it up." I'd hold it next to your head. And the gun would be chained in, and he'd go bang, 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 bang. He put half a dozen shots straight for the centre of this paddle. I'm holding it in my head, and he's about 30, 40 feet away.
I was sexually interfered with when I was 5 years old. Afterwards, I pooed my pants. And I walked home with my underpants full of poo. And on the way home, I set fire to some bushland and caused a massive fire. My dad belted me for setting fire to things and for pooing my pants. 5 years old. My mother, I left the Seventh-day Adventist Church. My mother felt that if I could be deemed to be insane, I'd still go to heaven, because God would view me, if I was mentally insane, then I couldn't be held responsible for my own actions. And then leaving the Seventh-day Adventist Church, I'd still go to heaven.
Chopper was institutionalized after this in a few psychiatric facilities, where he received a number of drug and shock treatments. He was declared insane 3 times throughout his late teens and into his early 20s. When he was out, jail wasn't far away for Chopper.
Yeah, I remember my first day in jail. So I got off the van, and this dirty great big bastard walked up to Mad Charlie, and he said to him, "By the end of the day, there's going to be shit on my dick or blood on my knife." He wanted to fuck Charlie up the arse or cut his throat. So I said, "Where is he?" And Charlie pointed him out. He was over in the showers. He had a white towel wrapped around him, cleaned his teeth. He's 6'4", he's as tall, weighed 19½ stone. How can I beat this bloke in a fight? So I walked up to him with a 10½-inch bony knife and stabbed him straight up the bum with a 10½-inch bony knife. And he had to go away to get his entire anal webbing restitched. Anyway, he come back to jail and come back to Pentridge. He's got his entire anal webbing restitched. He's got a colostomy bag on. When you go to pull the colostomy bag out, you've got to be very gentle, because the bodily organisms attach itself to the tube that runs from the colostomy inside the guts up into the colostomy bag, right? So when you come to pull the tube out, you've got to be very gentle, because it's like pulling rope for a barbed wire fence. Yeah, moments of slackness followed by moments of snag. So, Charlie's, this bloke's get off the van, Charlie's rushed in and bashed him. And this fella's pulled Charlie to the ground, starting to strangle Mad Charlie. I got to rush in and back up Charlie again. I rushed in, put my foot in the bloke's head, he's let go of Charlie and pulled me to the ground, started to strangle me. Charlie's bashed me in the head because he's gone blind. And I've stood up and I've started to put my foot into the bloke's ass, started to kick him in the ass, because that's where he got stabbed, and it was fucking shocking. And, anyway, so that was that. You know, who cares? Way to start your first day in jail. Stab a bloke up the bum.
It's all a matter of skill. I just hit them with the weight of the iron bar. And I just swing it through the air like this, just at the speed of the iron bar. Get the weight of the iron bar, and I just go swing it and go, whoo, whop, like that. Gently, whop, bang.
Yep.
Right. And you can tell from the first one whether you can hit them harder.
How can you tell?
Oh, you can see if they still stand there. Bit harder. And so I hit Richard Miladovich the head with a garden spade. I didn't whack him with a garden spade, it would have taken the whole head off. I just turned the spade around that way, and I let the spade travel through the air with its own weight. Bang! Lifted the skull up, so you see the brain. And it was a good feeling. It was that good, you know? Good. I liked it.
I wasn't frightened then. Because he was doing everything wrong. He handcuffed me with my hands in front of me. I was walking in fucking
Rockley Road, South Yarra, and this bloke got out, and he's got a map, and he's got a torch out, and he's looking at the map, and he said, "Do you know where Cromwell Street is?" And I said, "Cromwell Street's just across the road." I look at it on the map, and I said, "Oh, mate." And next thing I know, bang, I've got a 45 under here, right? He's taking me around to the boot, and he's handcuffing me with my hands in front of me, right? I said, what are you doing? And so anyway, he's driven me all the way up Truak Road to Mount Donoghue Wang. And anyway, I'm gets me out. I've got the garden spade. So he's got me to fucking dig. He says, dig a hole. Walked away, and he's got the car turned around, light shining on it, and I'm digging this fucking hole. Doing my handcuffs. So he's undone the handcuffs. I'm digging the fucking hole. Digging. I've got down to about my knee. I'm about knee deep. He's talking to me. He says, "Oh, you got some guts, chopper, I'll admit that." And I'm going whack, straight through the fucking knee. He's come fucking toppling over, fucking whop, straight through the fucking head. Slicing straight through the fucking head. Whack. He's dead as a doornail. And I've stuffed him into the fucking hole, dug it out a bit deeper, stuffed him into the fucking hole, filled it in, got in the car, I've driven the fucking over this mound of fucking earth, and got a bit of log, half a log, throwing that in on the fucking hole. And I've got the car and run the car up and on the log and pushed the log down on top of the fucking. I did a pretty good job. When I was finished, I threw the fucking the spade into the bush, and I grabbed his wallet and his watch and his rings, his gold chain, and everything, you know. And I could tell you the bloke's name, but I can't. He's still up there at Mount Donoghue Wang. I went up there a while ago to where I was convinced was the same fucking picnic spot near the river that happened. And for the life of me, I couldn't locate where I buried this bastard. I woke up the next day, his car was parked outside, and the only thing to tell me that it was true was bruises where he smashed me in the mouth with the gun, where he's given me a bit of a hiding. That's the only reason I know it happened. It's because of the injuries I was with for the next day. Because I thought to myself, was he going to kill me, or was he just going to fucking try to scare me and then fire a few shots in the air and let me run away? So there was a bit of a tradition of taking people out of the bush, making them dig their own grave, and then fire a few shots over their head and get them to run away. I think that's what this bloke intended to do. I don't think he intended to kill me. When I first went to Hayes Division, I carried a razor blade in the roof of my mouth. I bent the razor blade up, stuck it up the roof of my mouth. Like that, right? And they stripped me off naked, and a big Burchek, George Burchek, walked out. I'm standing there with nothing on, and I've got to my feet, and I've stood up, and I went like this. And I went like this, my finger, got the razor blade there, and I went... Around my finger, I've gone with the razor blade. He's taking the razor blade out of my hand. And I said, "The first prison officer that touches me physically within the walls of this jail, I will watch and I will wait and I will execute that man." And I said, "Afterwards, and you can hang me, it doesn't matter." I said, "I'll plead guilty to it and I'll do a life in jail, I'll do life sentence in jail. And if the first one of your prison officers that touched me physically, you know, I'll watch and I'll wait and I'll just cut his jugular vein, right? And you've got 10 minutes before the ambulance won't get him, he won't live to get to the front gate. He will bleed to death, right?" I said, "And you've got to decide which one of you is going to ring up the wife and say, 'Listen, husband won't be home tonight,' and tell her, kiss the kids goodnight, but they'll never see their father."
Chopper wasn't out of jail much in his early days. He spent only 18 months out of jail in total between the ages of 20 and 38. He racked up a number of offences for armed robbery, assault, kidnapping and firearms offences. But one of his most well-known acts occurred inside Pentridge.
They said to me, "You will stay in Hayes Division till the day, you know, you will rot in Hayes Division." I said, "I'll be out of here this afternoon."
So what age? You just... 20s, 30s?
I was 23. I'm doing that too. Anyway, I said, no, you won't. I said, yes, I will. I said, no, you won't. I said, yes, I will. Went back to the yard. They had this National Geographic on prosthesis. Yeah, bloke had a false hand made out of stainless steel. I said, I'll cut my bloody hand off with that sheet of tin over there that was against the wall, and I'll get a hook put on my hand. They said, you idiot, they're not going to let you have a hook on your hand in jail to get a hook when you get out. And I said, oh, correct. Mm-hmm. Correct the mundo. Right? So, I said, off of these. Get a razor blade. So, Kevin Taylor, the bloke that shot Pat Shannon, got a razor blade, he wrapped it in toilet paper, comes up to me. I said, no, I'm sitting there. I said, come on, go. He's like this.
Doing a slide.
Oh, I said, oh, for God's sake. I said, just rip him off. That really hurts. He's like this, didn't want to hurt me. He was like this, being oh so delicate. You know.
Is he in front of you?
Well, he's in front of you.
He's in front of you?
He's here,
yeah.
I'm there.
Yeah.
And I've got my arms folded.
Yeah.
Like this. You know. And he's like this. And I said, get with the program. You know, get them off. What are you doing? Off. And he went, I said, the other one. And he went, oh. And he went, and everyone freaked out.
How many people were in there?
About six.
About six. And what do they do? They jumped up on the benches.
Well,
yeah.
No, they're all in the shower, yeah. They're all up on the shower bench where everyone, you know, this little bench where people shower.
Which yard was it?
Number one shower yard.
Is that the one that's on the side that's covered over?
As soon as you work down the tunnel,
it's
the first door.
Yeah.
First door on you, right.
Yeah.
That's the number one shower yard.
Yeah.
And I got a towel, put it over my head, like that.
Yeah.
I could feel all this hot water coming out. It's like hot water. It wasn't hot water, it was blood.
Yeah.
And so I started to spin out a bit. And Kevin Taylor picked the ears up. He picks the bloody blade up. He gives me the bloody blade, and I got the blade.
Yeah.
And then he says, oh, this will, you know, and then he's rushing out trying to say, oh, I'll get the blade off him, sir. Yeah, chopper cut his ears off. And I'm going, yeah, I'll cut my ears off, you know, because old Taylor would have gotten into heaps of trouble.
Reputation is probably one of the most violent fucking stand-up street fighters in Melbourne. He was extremely violent. He used to whip people's eyes out. Blinding people in the street fight. He literally blind someone in the street fight, pull both their eyes out. Out the eye of what's his TV presenter, Baby John Burgess, on the beach when Baby John Burgess is working as a 3AK good guy. Baby John Burgess to go and help break up a fight on the beach, and Shane Goodfellow gears his eye out.
Shane Goodfellow, when he met me in Hayes Division, he was very paranoid. He used to put his to get out of the shower himself off properly, and he'd put a wet foot and a wet leg inside a dry pair of jeans, and he'd jump up and down with his pants in this wet thing, jump up and down for about a minute, hopping up and down, wet leg into his dry jeans. And I said to Amos Atkinson, I said, we have a 60 second window of opportunity here. He said, what do you mean? I said, next time he does that, I said, I'm going to creep up behind him, lock, get him on the ground, put my arms around his neck, and I'll put my feet around his body. You step over him, because you've got bigger hands than he's got. Goodfellow had huge hands, but Amos Atkinson has got bigger hands than Goodfellow. You just stand over him and you just punch his face in. You've got nothing left. So I as he's jumping up and down, I've rushed up, grabbed Goodfellow around the neck, wrapped my arms around him, and I used to be a Greco-Roman wrestler when I was younger, so I fell backwards. I've got him in a scissor lock around the body. Him gone crack, broke both his cheekbones, broke his nose, broke his jaw in about seven different places, fractured his skull, and broke his collarbones. Oh, I think I broke his collarbone. And we broke his leg as we threw him out of the yard. He was completely rooted, and he wouldn't take a stretcher, and he hobbled and hopped up to the front of Pentridge Gate waiting for the ambulance, right? Past him, And Griffel was standing there, a bottle over him. I said, "What's up, Shane?" And what happened? He said, "I got bashed." And Teddy King said, "Oh, it'd be that." And Griffel went like that. Teddy King walked over him. And as Teddy King got closer, Goodfellow went whack, smashed Teddy King and knocked him straight out. Because no one called me a dog in front of Shane Goodfellow ever again. No one ever bashed Shane Goodfellow ever in his whole life. It was the first time ever being given a hiding. And I saw him afterwards, and we got on like a house on fire. And and he gave me Sammy the Turk murder. I don't know why I did that. Anyway, I beat it. Because I give it a Shane Goodfellow, I took his reputation. I didn't bother to tell people how I give it a Shane Goodfellow. The sneaky, tricky, treacherous way I give it a Shane Goodfellow was a slow, cowardly way I give it to him. Who cares?
You go to jail, you're sitting there worried about your wife. You're worried about your family, you've got 7 years, you're bloody well crying in your sort of a night time. The bloke that hands out the clothes is giving you shit to wear. The bloke that hands out the radios is giving you a busted radio. The bloke that hands out the TV sets is giving you a busted TV set. You don't know nothing how the jail works, you're just surrounded by people. You go to clean your teeth and someone's pinched your toothbrush. You know, you go to your cell and someone's gone into your cell and shit on your bed. Just because you're on your own, you've got no friends. It's an animal place, right? Yeah. Suddenly, a bloke with no ears walks up to you. "What's your name?" "Oh, my name's Eric." "How tall are you, Eric?" "I'm 6'2". "How much do you weigh?" "I'm not going to kill him." "Eric, you punched the cunt out of half this fucking jar. What are you sitting there with tears in your eyes for?" "Oh, my wife, and, you know, there's blokes over there, you know, they come from where I live and they reckon I owe them money and you know, blah, 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 blah." "I'll tell you what, Eric, you don't look like a bad bloke. I'll go over and sort them blokes out for you. We'll fix this problem up for you." So I get a word to these blokes and I talk to them. My favourite trick was, I used to go up to them and I'd say, "Is that bloke over there?" I said, "I like that bloke. He's going to be a new member of my crew. He's a fucking idiot." "Well, he won't be an idiot in about 2 months' time after he stabbed about 20 of you. Because I intend to arm him up." Right? I says, "And that idiot over there crying, who you cunts have been standing over, is going to be in my crew. And I'm going to give him a bloody great big tomahawk." And I says, "And what's more, you're not going to be sending your mates around to pick on his fucking wife. And all this money you reckon he owes you, that's cancelled. That's cancelled. By the way, how is your mother in Preston Street, Ascot Vale? Is she well? Is she? You want to rock and roll? Let's party." No. Right? "That idiot over there is now in my crew. And I'm going to arm him up in about 20 minutes' time, right? And I'm going to tell him if he wants to stab the guts out of you, there'll be no comeback, will there?" Right? No, "Look, this has gone too far. This has gone too far. No, look, no. We only had a blue with the bloke on the outside. Look, we thought he'd give us up. We thought he'd give us up over that armed robbery. No, look, we could be wrong. We could be wrong, you know? And, I've got no trouble with his wife. It's only Bill who reckons he owes us the money. Oh, no, look, we'll sort it out. We'll sort it out. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Every single one of you is going to go up and apologise and say, 'I'm sorry for upsetting you, Eric.' Because Eric's in our crew now, right? Mm. And we may or we may not stab the shit out of you by tea time, right?" Go back. Eric's armed up, 20 minutes time. Instead of crying and being all lonely, next thing you know, Eric's down on the muscle line. Suddenly, he's wearing an overcoat. "Oh, it's 90 degrees in the fucking shade. I'm sweating like a pig. Oh, what's this? That's a fucking tomahawk. Oh my God, yeah. The screws have patting him down. They feel the bloody tomahawk, they look at him and go like that. Because he's standing next to me. They go, oh,
another recruit.
How mentally stable is he?
I go, oh.
And, because there is nothing more frightening in jail than a psycho. You can be a professional crim, you can be a professional bank robber, you can be a professional thief, you can be a professional anything you like, but the most feared thing in a prison, the most feared thing in the criminal world is a hole.
And Jimmy Baisley was standing there with his foot up on the ballot box with a 38 caliber handgun in his hand. But Jimmy Baisley had a weak bladder and had to go to the toilet quite a lot. And as he excused himself to go to the toilet, a couple of weeks later, they found the ballot box. It was stuffed. It was under the Westgate Bridge. It had been restuffed with Shannon votes. 1,250 fucking votes. Frowned to surviving members, but 1,250 people could vote. It was all fucking Shannon. All Shannon votes. No one voted for fucking Longley. So it was all bullshit. I asked Les Kane about that. He says, who won the election, Les? He said, you did, Bill.
Bill went to jail for kidding, killing Pat, didn't he?
Yeah, he got Kevin Taylor to run into the Druids Hotel and they shot.
You fought a long war on Billy's behalf. Why did you fight so strongly for him?
Oh, because I like Bill Longley, you know. We had the same enemies.
Which enemies were they?
Well, I was blooming with Keithy Four and Johnny Palmer, and they were Johnny Palmer was a painter and docker. Keithy Four was his old man, was a painter and docker. So I'd inherited fucking virtually every painter and docker as an enemy in Pentridge. So Pentridge was a natural eye to take Billy Longley's side.
Why were you so hated by the painters?
Because I bashed Keithy Four and Johnny Palmer. And Johnny Palmer was considered to be like the Prince Philip of the fucking painters and dockers. Very powerful young painter and docker. I didn't like him. So I bashed him.
I fought the Overcoat Gang War for 5.5 years. It was over Johnny and me have eaten the Christmas snags. Really, it was over Billy fucking Longley. Keeping in fuck. I created a gang called the Overcoat Gang and we ran amok. And I let it be known that anyone who wants to get to Billy Longley would have to come through me first. So they attacked me. And I was very hard to get.
Why were you so hard?
Oh, well, because I refused to lie down. I refused to die. I refused to lay down. I refused to be defeated. Lay down for them.
What are some of the secrets of fighting a war for that long?
I started the fucking war. I loved it, right? They didn't want it to go on for a week, let alone for a year. I wanted to go on forever. So therefore, everything they didn't want, I wanted. They didn't want to have violence on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Sunday. I did. They wanted to go home. I wanted to stay. So therefore, I was the winner. Their hearts weren't in it. Half of their friends, they didn't even like their fucking friends. Just loved it, you know. I just loved it. It's fucking great. I thought it was fantastic.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Chopper attacked a judge one time in an effort to get one of his mates, Jimmy Loughnan, released from jail. He later claimed to have made friends with the judge and had correspondence with him up until his death. Jimmy Loughnan went on to sneak attack Chopper, stabbing him a number of times, which cost Chopper a few feet of his intestines. This was either because of a contract the painter and dockers had out on him, that Jimmy wanted the money for that, or because Chopper's plans to ice pick the spines of the entire division who were against them was going too far. Jimmy later died in the Jika Jika division fire in 1987. Chopper has claimed to be involved in up to 19 deaths, but as time went on, and in the last interview he ever gave to 60 Minutes, he reduced that number to between 4 and 7, depending on how you look at it, which is still debated. But apparently his first was the 1971 murder of Des Costello.
So, Mark, what happened to Desi Costello?
Well, Desi Costello was standing here. He was here.
Yeah.
And, you're a fucking imbecile, Des, you know. You're a fucking imbecile. Fucking whack. Bang.
Outside the Leinster Arms Hotel in Collingwood, Chopper is taking me through this bizarre reenactment of a murder 42 years ago.
Come on, put your fucking hand up.
Right, this one?
Yeah, he packed it up and he went like that.
Right. It was an organised hit on Union heavy Desmond Costello. Chopper Reed was just 17 years of age and this was his first murder. Who was this bloke?
Painter and docker.
What was your involvement in his murder?
I was just a bloke that killed him.
Do you even remember why he had to die?
No, I can't really tell you why. I haven't got the faintest idea. I'm trying to think of something why. I haven't got the faintest or remotest idea why. You know, you start to get into the land of, oh, really, I don't really, why, I don't know why. And as I sit here now, I couldn't care less. I mean, why?
Did why ever matter to you?
Why had nothing to do with it.
Did he see it coming?
Well, no, he didn't really see it coming, no. He didn't believe it was going to come, not from me. I was only a young kid, I was only 17 years old.
When you were about to shoot him, what did he say?
When I pulled the gun out, he said, fuck off. You know? He said, what are you going to do with that, Chopper? I said, what do you think? And he said, get fuck, go away. He said, I'll smack you in the mouth. I'll take it off you and jam it up your ass, all that sort of stuff, you know? And so I just shot him. He started to insult me, you know?
But you were going to shoot him anyway, weren't
well,
you?
Well, yeah. But he was getting insulting, you know, saying that I wouldn't shoot him and he'd take the gun off me and stick it up my bum and all that sort of stuff, you know?
The pub's keg cellar became Des Costello's temporary tomb.
Danny's gone.
when you threw... Why are you laughing?
Down he goes.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
And you thought he was dead?
yeah. Dead as a doornail as far as I was concerned.
But he wasn't, was he?
Well, the next morning he was still a bit of a cackle.
So what did you do then?
Step on his fucking throat. We just fucking went like that. We just took a bloody... just a bit of a... Bit of a... That's all it took.
Did you know that you had that in you then?
Yeah, of course I did, yeah. Me and man Charlie walked into his cell, Charlie fell into the ground, and I've jumped up on his bunk and jumped on his head, from his bunk onto his head, from his bunk onto his head, from his bunk onto his head, right? And then I've gone from the bunk, I slipped in off the head and hit the chest, from the bunk on into the chest, bang, bang. And he wasn't dead, you know, but he was sort of like, you know? And so I've taken his shoelaces off him, tied his hands behind his back, and then I've taken the sheets off him, wrapped the sheets around his neck, lifted him up with Mad Charlie, got the sheets around his neck, and I've tied the sheet up over the top railing of the obso gate, pushed him down, and I've gone out of the cell, and I've closed the cell door. There was no one that saw us. We were pretty quick in here. And... anyway, at 7 o'clock that morning, they've opened his cell door and found out that he'd committed suicide. No one ever questioned me for murder over it. No one ever thought it was murder. He was thought it was suicide.
And you almost sound proud of your work on that one.
Oh, well, anyone that had killed a child in such a manner didn't deserve to live.
But why was it up to you to...
Well, it must have been up to me because everyone in the Roman Yard shook hands with each other and said the first person that sees this bloke was obliged to kill him. And I happened to be the first person to see him, so it was up to me to kill him.
In this next clip, Chopper describes some of his battle wounds received from jail and what he got up to when he was finally out, preying on drug dealers for the cash they had. Chopper said his favourite torture methods were using bolt cutters to chop off toes and using a blowtorch on people's toes and sensitive areas.
You get hit with a claw hammer. I got stabbed through the heart with an ice pick. A sharpened 7.5-inch screwdriver. Yeah. Came out the back, they had to take me to hospital in a yellow cab because they couldn't lay me down and put me in the ambulance. And when they got me to hospital, the doctor that cut my ears off, that he saved my ears back on, put his fingers up there and just pulled the screwdriver out like that. I said, wasn't that risky? He said, well, if you've heard about the bloke with the axe through the head, you take him up to the operating theatre, you've got 15 surgeons standing around waiting to operate, someone's got to pull the bloody axe out. He said, someone would have had to pull that screwdriver out anyway. He said, the fact that you're standing there meant it wasn't through the heart, it was through the arteries like that. There was a screwdriver and there was the arteries around it, so I hadn't gone through the heart.
And who was actually responsible for that?
A Yugoslav guy called Hello Buddy. He never used to say anything except Hello Buddy. I walked past him, I forgot to say hello buddy, and he stabbed me in the heart with a 7.5-inch screwdriver. Yeah. He's dead. Died in jail. No fault of mine. Someone stabbed him in the heart with a 7.5-inch screwdriver. 3 days after he stabbed me.
And basically these crims didn't come from my background. These were middle class people from middle class neighbourhoods that had got into crime.
Yeah.
They had no reason to even be in my world. You know? I didn't pick on blokes from my own background.
Yeah.
You know? These people were the, you know, his father was a brain surgeon. He was a neurosurgeon.
Jesus.
You know, people have done 3 or 4 years in university who speak 3 or 4 languages, have travelled the world, who've been part of the cafe latte bloody set, and next thing you know, go to Bangkok and meet some little gook who wants to sell them some, and the next thing you know, they're drug lords. Then they meet me, the real thing, right? And they've got to part with their money. Then these characters have got to sit down and try to figure out a gang war, to get a war with someone, and this is not part of their culture. Actually, the drug world has invited into it a whole heap of people that don't belong to the criminal world.
Giving them the apprenticeship.
They don't belong to the criminal world. Never done a day's jail.
Hmm.
And they bump into characters like me. Gee, we never counted on this. Gee, we didn't expect this. You know, and their Zegna suits or whatever it is, and their mobile phones and their bloody BMWs. I mean, you can't kill people by belting overhead with your American Express card.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had the money, and they had bloody too much of it, and they lived like pigs. You know, you can walk into a biggest heroin dealer in the western suburbs. You can walk into his house, and if you saw a turd sitting on the lounge room floor, it wouldn't be the first dirty thing you'd notice. You understand? It wouldn't be the first dirty thing you'd notice. I mean, he had last year's Weet-Bix dishes still sitting in the sink.
Yeah.
I mean, this bloke lived like an animal, like a pig. He had 6 or 7 TV sets stacked on top of each other. The first one was broken. He put a new one on top of that and plugged that in. And then that didn't break. He put it this insanity. And I'm walking in, there's 4 TV sets stacked on top of it. The top one worked. The other ones have been kicked in because of football games he didn't like. So he'd shoot the TV set, you know. And, madness, you know, insanity, you know.
Who lived with him? Did someone live with him?
He had a wife who was a heroin addict.
Mm.
You know. I mean, these people had a lot of money, but they lived like animals. And they were fair game. And they couldn't organise a fucking brothel, you know. So I made a fortune of these characters. Yeah. I used to walk around here, I used to say, listen, here you go. Here, hold them for cash. I'm a bit broke. And so I can't help you. And I said, well, listen, I'll tell you what. You try getting from where you're sitting to the front door. He's already going to shoot you from where you're sitting to the front door. Because that's about as long as you've got to get me some money right now. I said, I've got 60 seconds. 60 seconds to produce some money or I'm going to fucking shoot you. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's start arguing. Let's say, I haven't got any money. 6, 7, 8, 9,
10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18,
19, 20,
I haven't got any money, 20, the money would come.
Yeah. And did you do it just like that?
I knew they had the money.
Yeah. But you're very polite and friendly.
Oh, I said, listen, you're making a fortune. Selling heroin all over the western suburbs, you know. I haven't come to ask you for your redundancy package, you know. I haven't come to ask you for your widowed mother's pension, you know. I'm asking you for 10 grand out of the 60 I know you just picked up on Sunday. Oh, they didn't like part with it. Oh, God, they didn't like part with it. They well did part with it, but, you know. But, oh, that's why... Well, they did part with it. Oh, they loathed the party with it. But it'll suit the same blokes in my club on Sunday, you know?
Right. And how would they be then?
Oh, they'd have all their gang there with them. Ready to rock and roll.
Yeah. And what happens then?
I just walk up and say, how are you, boys? I throw a few bob in the bar and say, would you like a drink? Would you like a drink? You may as well, it's your money. Well, they hated me.
The 1987 shooting of Siam Ozakam, or Sammy the Turk, is perhaps the most well-known of Chopper Reid's crimes. It was highly publicised at the time and became even more infamous after Chopper's books and the movie which followed. Chopper was acquitted on self-defence. He couldn't be tried again for the same crime, but over the years, his original version of events, that Sammy had lured him outside, then taken his own gun and attempted to shoot him, but didn't take the safety off, changed quite a lot.
He told me he was going to sell me a handgun out here. I said, well, where is it, mate? And he said, they'll be here in a minute. I said, who's they? He said, they'll be here in a minute. And I turn around and see nothing behind me. And so I thought, they'd be here in a minute, you treacherous bastard, you know? And I said, you brought me out here to kill me, didn't you? And so I shot him. As you do. I shot him. And down he went, and that was it. I was taking their money. I was driving the western suburbs crazy, you know? I was standing over bloody virtually half of them, and taking their money. They didn't like it. When I killed Sammy the Turk, that wasn't a self-defence. That was outright fucking murder. Sorry, I shouldn't be swearing, but that was outright murder. I told the armoury squad that night that it was self-defence. I said he grabbed the gun out of the front of my pants, and I grabbed the shotgun out and click, click, click here, and I've gone bang through the head. And I thought to myself, if anyone believes this story, they got rocks in the head. Everyone swallowed it. I couldn't understand. And next thing you know, the jury would come back and said, not guilty. I didn't go, cheer, cheer. I just dumbfounded as the jury walked out. I'm still looking. Do they say not guilty? I couldn't believe it. Not guilty for that. Oh, God almighty. Thank God you can't be tried twice.
In 1992, Chopper was convicted of shooting a man named Sid Collins. Collins was an outlaw motorcycle club member, and this happened in Chopper's car whilst they were parked in Sid Collins' driveway. Eventually, he got parole in 1998, some 6 years later, and married a local woman named Mary Ann Hodge on the advice to do so. When he got out, they had a son together, but later separated. Chopper went on to say that the marriage was actually a sham for him to get out of jail and Tasmania altogether. He went on to write a number of crime novels after this, which have sold over 500,000 copies. The first one he wrote, From the Inside, with John Sylvester and Andrew Rule, which was later called a rough little book marketed as an autobiography but had many fictional aspects. His later books, from Chopper No. 5 onwards, were largely fiction. He also wrote a children's book entitled Hooky the Cripple, and the follow-up movie directed by Andrew Dominic made his transition from crook to entertainer official. He later returned to Victoria and married childhood sweetheart Margaret Kassar. They also had a son together. Chopper had a number of interesting opinions on the Melbourne gangland killings and some of its main players, which was raging at this time. but he was not a part of, being long since retired and now doing stand-up comedy with Mark Jackson and Roger Rogerson.
Now, you've got no professional bank robbers anymore because banks have changed. There's no counters to jump up on anymore. You walk into a bank these days, how's a counter jumper? Where's the counter? There's no counters these days. You can't do it. Banks have changed, so there's bank robberies have gone out the door. Safe crackers, it's all changed. There's no longer safe crackers. It's a dying art. Now they just fucking blow teller machines out, ATM machines out, pull them out of the walls with fucking front end loaders or something. I don't know how they do it. The standover man's gone because you can't stand over nightclubs and massage parlors and gambling clubs these days because there is no more illegal brothels and there's no more illegal gambling going on. So you can't go standing over the casino because they'll just call the police and arrest you. You get burglars that used to burgle houses and go for artworks or jewellery or gold or cash. Burglar gets into a house these days, he'll shit in your sink, he'll smash your TV up, he'll do poos in every room in the bloody house, write graffiti all over the fucking house and take $5 worth of small change out of your purse. Burglars have turned into fucking vandals. And you got these mice, people that would never have survived the criminal world years ago, becoming drug kingpins. I mean, how would Carl Williams become a drug kingpin in the 70s? You know, you're supposed to be able to fight for a start. You know, I grew up in a world where the ones that got to the top had to be tough, hard bastards to be able to give it and dish it out and take it. You'd be able to take as much violence as you could dish out. And you'd be able to take a shitload of violence because you want to dish out a shitload of violence. How would Carl Williams be back in the 70s when you had to rely on how physically hard you were to get there? He would never have survived. Benji Veneman would never have survived in the 70s. He would have just got bashed to the bloody ground. He would have got bent over and his little Greek bottom would have got flogged.
Carl Williams is about, I'm 55 years old. He's about, how old would he be, 30-something? When I was running around, Carl Williams would be playing with his Meccano set. In 1987, 77, when I was running around, there's no use saying to me, like, did I ever have the guts to have a go at Carl Williams? Of course I would. I would have nailed Carl Williams' hands to a coffee table and just pulled it out of his backside. Carl Williams is a wobbly bottom little cherub face little boy whose life would be in danger if he stepped into any shower block in any jail in the country, right? Just because you're a drug lord, please don't think that you can that you've got any respect in a jail. In jail, people with respect are people that can fight like thrashing machines, or are very, very quick with a hammer or an iron bar, and will use it instantly.
Dino Dibber and Paul Kalapalaitis, they watched the Scarface movie, and they thought life was a movie to them. Because they ended up making enough money out of drugs where they could emulate movies. And a lot of crooks do that. They see they see something on a film and make enough money out of drugs to start living the life they've seen in the movies. So life imitates art, art imitates life. But of course, life's not like a movie. That's what Dino Dibber found out in the end. You know, he got shot. Dead. And like that, Benji Veneman's the same fucking thing. 5 foot 2 inches tall, if he was 2 inches shorter, make a good circus dwarf. Never shot no one in his fucking life. Benji Veneman, who's he ever fucking shot? Dino Dibber and Paul Kalapalaitis. Dino Dibber would have fucking backhanded Benji Veneman into the toilet. You know? Dino Dibber and Paul Kalapalaitis, they might have been fucking wombats, but they were better than fucking Benji Veneman. And that fucking underbelly movie, that's a lot of shit. The Homicide Squad don't know who did these killings, so they blamed it all onto Benji Veneman after Benji Veneman got shot dead by fucking McGatto in self-defence. I reckon he's another all piss and fucking potatoes. It's all fucking shit, you know? I don't know. Oh, I get so frustrated. I don't know whether I want to have a shit or a fucking haircut. Benji Veneman, he didn't shoot fucking Victor fucking Pierce. Victor Pierce had fucking killed a heap of people. He'd fucking not worried about Benji Veneman.
Benji Benjamin didn't do fucking the Russian Radov, nicked the Russian, because the Bulgarian bastard, he had the fucking Albanian mafia had put a contract out on him 2 weeks before he died. The Albanian mafia put a contract out on you 2 weeks before you fucking died. You're fucking dead. Did nothing to do with Carl fucking Williams. Bloody, the Marines were just a bunch of idiots. A bunch of pissheads and idiots. And two bob thieves. Sneak thieves and penny anti-criminals and shit kickers. Two bob gunmen, you know. Look, Jason Randy, he started that whole war because he couldn't kill Carl Williams. I mean, he gut shot him and just left him there. You know, And he had Carl Williams living in his ecstasy factory, and Carl Williams is making ecstasy for Jason Rand for 2 days a week, and then making ecstasy for himself 2 or 3 days a week, right? And putting a different colour on it or a different pattern on it, and Jason Rand couldn't figure out where this other ecstasy was coming from.
But it appeared Chopper wasn't done killing just yet. He'd been questioned over the 2002 disappearance of Sid Collins, the man he'd previously shot and wounded and done time over. This is what Chopper claims finally happened, which, like many of his tales, has been disputed.
And so then, 10 years later...
About 10 years later, yeah.
You track him down in Casino.
No. We're in Casino, New South Wales, doing a talk night. Me and Jacko doing a talk night. Who do you think comes up to me after the talk night and wants me to sign a piece of memorabilia? Hello? Hello, Chopper. You sign this? I can't believe it. What are you doing here? Oh, bygones are bygones. Can you sign this? No. I'm not signing anything with you. I'm not signing anything. I can't even believe it, you know. And I'll see you backstage. They come and talk to us backstage. He was there. Oh, couldn't believe it. Mad. Idiot. Completely insane. Off his head on cocaine.
Right. And so what happened then?
Oh, I'm not going to tell you what happened then, but we took him. Oh, I've got him in a... I hopped into his car, going back to his place, bang, 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 bang. And I shot him the last time with his gun. I killed him this time with his gun. That's how stupid he is. I shot him the first time with his gun. I shot him the second time with his gun. How stupid is this person? He is an idiot, complete idiot.
And this time,
yeah.
Were you shooting to kill him?
Oh, yeah, this time I was shooting to kill him. Last time he just got it in the guts and tripped to hospital. Very Christian last time. Not this time. Bang.
Why did you murder him?
Because he was an absolute turd.
I should have been dead a dozen times. The time I fell asleep in the tenant restaurant, face down, it must be the marinara with my gun on the table, and they escorted me, and these people were friends of and they escorted me to the toilets, clean me up and give me my gun back. It was a miracle. That was a miracle. So, I wouldn't say that my survival was a result of my genius. More as a result of their stupidity.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know whether I enjoy it. What's to enjoy?
Would you like to be accepted as a normal member of society?
I think everyone would eventually like to be accepted as a normal member of society. I wonder at times will it ever happen, because people are greatly taken up by my past. And diagnosing it and psychoanalysing every bloody aspect of it, and my past is starting to bore me. That's why I don't write no more sort of like crime books. I'm trying to get away from them. I'm not sorry I wrote them, but I'm finding the whole thing a bit boring. Now everyone's dropping off the twig left, right and centre. I can write a ripping good yarn now about it all. But I couldn't be bothered, you know. I mean, handy times, I'm just like, oh, boring.
So... what should people think about your Chopper? Are you Chopper or are you Mark Reed?
Well, I'm Mark Reed. Mark Reed. Chopper Reed. I mean, they call me Chopper since, what, grade three? What am I, uninvent me nickname? I don't...
I'm not talking about the nickname, talking about the myth.
All right, the myth. The myth is there.
Why don't you just write the book that sets it straight?
I will, ultimately, in the end. I will.
the very, very last book. Because that is the story. The story, the real story, is about how a bloke in jail and two newspaper reporters got together and did this.
During his time in jail, Chopper contracted hepatitis C, which he said was from sharing razor blades. He had a number of health issues arise from this and was apparently eligible for a liver transplant, but refused to go on a donor list as he didn't want to deprive someone else of the organ. In April 2012, Chopper was diagnosed with liver cancer and he passed away on the 9th of October 2013, aged 58.
How do you think the other prisoners would see you?
They hate my guts. I'm as popular as a pork chop in a synagogue.
Oh, give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wild, open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze and listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in. Just turn me loose. Let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.